Matt, we fucked up.
What did we do?
We just recorded a whole episode and we forgot to shout out our listener contributor of the week. We got one. We got three contributors to shout out, actually.
Fuck yes.
Two that we know, one that we don't. We got to give a shout out. This was, we were told to read this.
We'll just read whatever you tell us to read.
Yeah. I don't know if this is Oleg, but this is somebody. This is what I have to read. It's what I have to read right now. Shout out to the MIB Chad Index Fund. We only buy tops with no stops on margin. Oleg is a Chad of all Chads, a true thundercock. Bless up, Marty and Matt. We love you.
Love you guys, too.
Hey, we love our listener contributors. If you guys want to contribute, go to tftc.io/contribute. You can send a message like that there. Oleg is the Chad of all Chads, a true thundercock. I would like to be referred to as a thundercock one day. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but...
I don't really know what the message means, but I'm digging it.
We're going to drop this in the beginning of the episode just because we fucked up so bad. But before doing that, we got to shout out to JW. We got to give a shout out to Farface 2000, who bought us a bottle of JW Blue to celebrate when we pass 10K, if we pass 10K at some point.
Delicious.
In the future. And then
when we pass 10K.
When we pass. And then somebody, an unnamed listener, bought us a bottle of Balvenie as well.
It's delicious.
Yeah, we can't wait to enjoy that. Shout out to you freaks. Thank you for contributing.
I just want to say, like, I think it's so cool that people can just contribute anonymously.
Right.
And there's like no way, we have no idea who it is.
We just have UTXOs. We're not following them. We're not a chain analysis company.
No, we're not.
Yeah.
But,
so,
you know, CoinJoin before you send them to us.
Definitely, definitely. Send it straight from Wasabi. Don't even think about sending it from your exchange
or
account.
Lightning.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for you freaks for contributing. If any of you freaks want to contribute by buying a bottle of whiskey, just throwing us a donation or buying a shout out, do so at tftc.io/contribute. Enjoy this. Enjoy this riff we just ripped. What is up, freaks? It's your boy Marty Bent here on a gloomy Thursday, back in the studio with our boy Matt Odell for another episode of Rabbit Hole Recap. Matt, what's going on?
How's it going, guys?
It's going good. Good week. We just pumped over 9K there for a little bit, for half a minute, I believe.
You're like the only person in the world who caught it.
Yeah. Blew my load early with the Vegeta meme. Can't repost it on the way back up. Right now we're sitting at $8,627.67 according to the trade block XBX index, and we're at block 578,561 according to my node.
116 sats percent.
People,
there you go.
Your pennies are not going as far as they used to. Well, yeah, we've been last time we met was a week ago. What chart? Oh, I had the week chart up. I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
It's a big candle.
Not to 1 hour.
Bitcoin's volatile again. It's beautiful.
It is volatile again. Last time we met, on the 23rd, we were at, like, hovering around 8,000. Volatility's back. Before we get into the news topics, there's a lot of drama this week. Probably won't dive into the drama. It's not even worth it. This episode of Tales from the Crypt, Rabbit Hole Recap, was brought to you by Unchained Capital. You freaks know all about their vault service already. They're helping you secure your Bitcoin in their 2 of 3 multi-sig vaults. You can use your Trezor, your Ledger, and Electrum, I believe, as well. Ideally, use the hardware wallets, and you have Unchained there as a second signer to a 2 of 3 multi-sig if you need them, and they're working on ways to get more creative with their multi-sig if you guys have businesses and stuff like that, and you have unique key schemes that you want to use. They're gonna help you out moving forward. Right now, if you sign up by going to www.unchained-capital.com/vaults and you sign up, you're gonna get 3 free months of Seyfeddin Moose's The Bitcoin Standard Research Bulletin. Very high quality publication there. Again, www.unchained-capital.com/vaults. This episode is also sponsored by the Cash App. You freaks know all about them. The first P2P finance app to offer Bitcoin selling on their P2P payments app to offer Bitcoin buying on their platform. Their number one finance app in the App Store for the last 2 years. They're helping us stack sats, and they also have this boost program, which I use every day. You get a card, you get to personalize it, put your signature, put a little Bitcoin there, put a little in the Fed, whatever. You can get creative with it. Doesn't really matter. Whatever you want to do. Download the Cash App today at your local app store and start using the Boost program, saving money, stacking sats. Hopefully they implement sats back in the future.
At your local app store.
Yeah.
There's like two and F-Droid.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it depends where you are, what device you're using. And hey, while we're talking about local app stores, let's talk about local podcasting platforms. If you freaks are out there and you like this podcast, please like, subscribe, review. Every like, every pound, every subscribe goes a long way.
Yeah, the reviews help a lot. I didn't realize that.
They do. They really do. Speaking of reviews, why don't you review the latest Wasabi update? It looks like they have an OS X stability improvements and Treasure One support has now been added.
Yeah, the big thing is the Mac stability improvements. The latest update of Wasabi previously was freezing up for people running on Mac, so it shouldn't do that anymore. And their fee selection changed a little bit, so it's going to be a little bit cheaper, but confirms will take a little bit longer for the actual coin joins.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The way they already had it set up was basically it uses the lowest fee possible, and then it can keep joining, it could keep participating in rounds if it's unconfirmed. So they would raise, it would just keep raising until it confirmed. And I think there's a max of 20 unconfirmed transactions that could be there.
Yeah.
So now they made it a little bit more aggressive, so it tries to get even cheaper fee. Because, you know, fees have been going up lately.
Yeah. I saw that there was almost the first 100-person coin join last night on Wasabi.
I think we've had one before, but maybe not.
I think I saw...
But we almost had one again.
Yeah, I saw Adam Fisker tweet about that this morning. So it seems like more people are using it.
Yeah, I mean, we got Bull Bitcoin using it, which is a big plus probably. But yeah, liquidity in general seems to be going up. Usage in general goes up. And as more people use it, the better it gets, right? So,
yeah.
And today, I think it looks like there's a update to Ledger Live in the pipeline, which you probably shouldn't be using Ledger Live from a privacy perspective anyway, because they can see all your transactions. But they updated it so it can finally... They're about... You know, there's an update in the works that allow them to send to BEC32 addresses, which is what Wasabi uses. Because up until this point, you had to use an intermediate wallet to transfer in between.
Yeah, that was that the thing where the BEC32 address weren't showing up in the GUI and you had to...
No, with Ledger, they weren't even letting you send. In Ledger Live app, like the actual app, they weren't even letting you send to BEC32 addresses. You had to send to a different wallet first, like a Samurai or a Green Wallet, and then or Electrum, and then send from there to Wasabi.
Oh, I misheard you. I thought you were talking about the Treasure One.
Oh yeah, Treasure One support is now active. The issue with that was you couldn't type. I believe the issue with that is that, you know, you can't type the PIN or the passphrase on the device on the original. So now. I'm assuming they give you prompts when you do it. The Treasure T obviously doesn't have this issue. The cold card doesn't have this issue because you just enter it on device.
Which is the way it should be done, probably.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously it's way more secure if you do it on device.
Yeah, and this is a good Wasabi usage and becoming more private with your UTX is a good segue into something I wrote about earlier this week that I thought was going a little... under the radar. I don't know how alarmed we should be, or I think we should be pretty alarmed. I think we don't know how severe the threat is, but we will in a few weeks. So something to be on the lookout is the Financial Action Task Force releasing guidelines over the next couple weeks about how cryptocurrency exchanges and other custodians should act, and they're going to have to join this coalition and check off a bunch of KYC, AML, check boxes and basically taking a lot of data on their customers, sort of chain analysis, company porn, make it so that everybody's being tracked on chain, at least through these custodial services. And the rule they're falling on is the quote-unquote travel rule for correspondent banks. So it seems like they're maybe legitimizing these exchanges as financial institutions, but trying to dragnet their digital panopticon over to this industry.
You know, I don't think, obviously this is not great. especially for businesses that operate in, I think like pretty much most countries have to comply with these kind of rules.
Yeah, so it's a FATF. I keep messing. It's an awkward alphabet soup acronym. FATF, Financial Action Task Force, is a coalition of 38 countries. I believe it was started in France. And I'm pretty sure they're unelected officials who are just writing these draconian laws on people.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, it's not great. Preferred wouldn't be happening. But even if it does, like, you should have just assumed that this was going to happen anyway. I think this is the natural end game. And so Bitcoin will go through like an intermediate phase where it'll be harder to get, harder to use in a lot of ways because of draconian regulations. And then it'll emerge pretty much relatively unscathed from it because that's how it's designed. It's designed to not give fucks about this.
Is this the beginnings of the potential for a bifurcated market for UTXOs? Those which are quote unquote tainted on the regulated exchanges and those which are not?
No, I mean, I don't think that we shouldn't, you know, just assume that using Bitcoin privately makes, you know, is an illegal action. And I feel like the more we, just because it's possible for them to do it doesn't mean we should even consider it, because it's just a ridiculous concept. Like, if we, everyone can has easy access to coin joins now. You can mix relatively easy through Wasabi. If you try and ban with usage, you know, as usage grows, which it is growing, if you try and ban transactions with a CoinJoin history, you're just basically banning self-custody altogether. It's like if they just banned Bitcoin. Yeah, they can ban Bitcoin, right? But the whole point is, if banning Bitcoin is an effective way of destroying Bitcoin, then Bitcoin shouldn't have any value anyway in the first place.
All right. Just going to have to take these hurdles on head first. And like I said, the title of that Ben in particular is The Battle is well underway. So yeah, just be prepared for this stuff. It's going to be tumultuous. It's going to be a little awkward. It's going to be, you're going to have to stand up and say, hey, no, we want to defend this right to transact in private and have financial freedom at the end of the day.
Your government is probably going to make you disclose addresses, disclose ownership amounts, and so you're gonna, you know, that's gonna be really hard to enforce, and it'll be harder to enforce on an individual basis if you learn to use Bitcoin privately today, you know, before any of those kind of onerous regulations come to pass.
No, this highlights another thing that we harp on, is that it's better to get on this stuff earlier rather than later. And yes, start today when you don't necessarily think you need it, and you'll be very happy when you do need it at some point in the future. This goes into something else. This is going to be a segue for something. I missed the segue.
It's the worst type of segue.
I know. I missed the segue. I'm sorry, freaks. Oh. Here's a segue. To help combat this, we need to make Bitcoin as decentralized as possible. And a couple days ago, Brian Bishop, this dude Gleb's last name's escaping me, Peter Woola, Greg Maxwell, and a couple other cryptographers released a proposal for Erle, which is a proposal for a different type of transaction relay network between nodes, and this would considerably decrease the bandwidth needed to relay transactions between nodes. So
by a shit ton.
So if you go, I wrote about it the other day. If you go to the paper, and this is basically on their test with the variables and the parameters that they set in this test, which may not be exact when it hits the market, but is directionally very close. If you were a full node connected to 32 peers. If you are a full node currently connected to 32 peers on average, you're spending about 17.3 gigabytes of bandwidth per month. With this Erle network, that would be severely reduced to below 1 gigabyte, 0.94.
It's fucking insane.
Yeah. So we talk about decentralization, and the path towards decentralization means that people need to run full nodes, be able to run full nodes, and this allows people with lower power devices and people in areas with suboptimal internet connectivity to run full nodes if implemented.
Yeah, you want more full nodes, the better.
Yes, and this would severely increase the ability to run a node. And the way they're doing this is they're using Minisketch. I'm not going to describe the technical inner workings of this perfectly, but the way I understand, they're using Minisketch in a way to compress transaction states or transaction sets, making it easier to relay. And basically the trade-off with that is latency. Right now it takes about 3.15 seconds to get a new transaction relayed across the whole network. The trade-off, if Erlay were to be implemented, it would increase that to 5.75 seconds. But the authors of the paper seem to think this is a good trade-off. It may even combat some timing attacks.
Yep. I mean, we're going to link to the actual proposal as well.
Yeah, and these guys can describe this much better than Uncle Marty can.
It is, you know, it's a little bit dense. It's mostly magic. They mostly use magic to accomplish this.
Yeah,
goal.
It is magic internet money.
Yeah. But, like, so efficiency improvements like this are the things you'd like to see if we were ever to need to increase the block weight in the future.
Yes.
No need to put the cart ahead of the horse.
Exactly. And this is something another thing that I think went sort of under the radar that is important to highlight. Like, these are the dull, boring upgrades that you should be looking for, the ones that cut bandwidth for full nodes connected to 32 peers from 17.3 gigabytes to below a gigabyte every month. That's a crazy improvement.
Bandwidth is the biggest restriction and cost for running these nodes. In some places, you can't even get that kind of bandwidth capacity to run an effective full node. And node runners they're not getting direct benefit. You know, there's plenty of indirect benefits like full sovereignty and better privacy and actually verifying the chain, being a full Bitcoin user. But you're not actually getting paid to run it. So you want to keep those costs as low as possible. Otherwise, basically what you're doing is you're socializing transaction fees to all the people running nodes.
Yes. Just a crazy step forward. And again, on top of that, so the announcement cost right now, on top of that connectivity cost, the announcement cost too of just like sending the transactions per month right now is 4.33 gigabytes. This would drop this to 0.7 gigabytes, so two areas efficiency. And again, this is based off of the parameters and the variables of these particular simulations within the paper, but it seems directionally like a huge, huge boost in efficiency. Speaking of huge boosts, Bitcoin just hit a new all-time high in terms of based in Argentinian pesos. So
I like that meme that's going around, you know, like the chart. This is how Argentinians see Bitcoin.
Yeah. There was another one on there. It was Argentina. I believe Turkey was on there as well. The lira has been falling fast against.
It's probably above the all-time high for Venezuelan, right?
Yeah, most likely. So Bitcoin continues to beat up the weak currencies in the world.
Yeah, we'll just see more and more of them fall.
Yes, until.
I mean, once it hits a new all-time high in USD again, it's basically a new all-time high in all of them. So.
Yeah, and. Who knows with the volatility lately? That stuff could come faster than you think. This again, we don't like to talk about price a lot. I will just note.
We like to talk about price.
All right, we talk about price. Let's just note that this recovery is happening faster than I expected.
Yeah, it always does. It doesn't matter.
Could be a pump fake. Could be a pump fake.
Yeah, and then it'll go down faster than I expected or go up. It just always catches you off guard.
It does.
You're always.
Well, when you have billionaires trying to buy 25% of the whole Bitcoin supply.
It's definitely a bullshit article. I mean,
You're Twitter profiting off this
article. I know. I feel a little bit dirty about that one. But it's, I mean, imagine how bad of a broker you would have to be. So Forbes has an article today where they said that a particular client of a particular art dealer that also sells Bitcoin, OTC, told her that he wants 25% of the Bitcoin supply. And so that's completely outlandish to begin with. He's never going to be able to do that, even if he wanted to.
I would love to see him try.
And then the second thing is, like, how bad of a broker would you have to be to...
Oh, yeah, I'll go get that. I'll be right back.
No, like, and you, like, start the process, and then you, like, announce it to the world that right. you're trying to get 25%.
It seems like a... a media ploy for this person's art career.
Yeah, I mean, she's selling her Bitcoin brokerage business, right? Like, she's telling people in the article to come to her if they want to sell or buy.
Well, like you said, she's obviously bad at this business if she's
yeah, that's
making the market aware
it.
Of the fact that somebody's trying to buy up a quarter of the supply.
Yeah, I just thought the article was funny for a bunch of different reasons, so I just hope... I think most people understand that it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Without me having to, like, actually spell it out to them.
In terms of...
But there are billionaires around the world that are fucking taking notice, absolutely. I mean, look, we have fucking... Jack is the newest billionaire to actually come out really full support of Bitcoin.
Billionaires, football players. Matt Barkley was telling people to Bitcoin and chill earlier this week.
Did you see Russell put up stickers in his locker room?
He did. Shout out Crypto Graffiti for providing that qual meme game in the back of NFL press conferences. Yeah, slowly but surely. The virus spreads, as Pomp says.
Let's talk about... They had the Oslo Freedom Forum.
Yes.
And there was, like, a big focus on Bitcoin this year, supposedly.
Yeah, so Joe Carlson was there with the Open Money Project, with Alejandro as well. Alex Gladstein.
Yeah,
dropping that episode with him tomorrow. That's a really good one, Freaks. Look out for that.
Oh, you're dropping it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah, but Bitcoin was a big topic.
They said 4.1 billion people are living under authoritarian regimes.
It's more than half the planet.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. And people say Bitcoin doesn't have a use case. Fucking ridiculous.
What's the definition of an authoritarian regime?
They did include America there.
They did?
They didn't. No. You know, it was like they had China there. I think they had Russia on it. There's a map with it. They like redded states.
Yeah. That's a lot of people owning Bitcoin, or not owning Bitcoin, but under authoritarian regimes who probably should own Bitcoin.
That's pretty crazy.
Before things get too desperate there. Another thing, like China in the news, like the trade wars are starting to heat up. Still heating up. Starting to heat up. They've been heating up. They're boiling. Haven't been following the yuan to Bitcoin charts too closely this week, but it seems like Trump was in Japan. He went to the sumo wrestling event with Shino Abe, and it seemed like a very, very big posturing event for the U.S. and Japan against China. So it's big dick flexing when you know these geopolitical sort of dick flexing pageantry stuff. That one was a big one in my mind because the Japanese-Chinese relationship isn't the best. And
yeah, that's an understatement.
Yeah. And Trump doing that is definitely a sign of like, hey, we're partnering with your enemy.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to look at the yuan charts. It's the same charts anyway. I mean, I like that narrative that the trade war has been pushing up the price. If I was a Chinese person, I would be absolutely going whole hog into Bitcoin, but I mean, I'm an American person and I'm doing that anyway, right? So,
well, Eric Meltzer, he said he was in Beijing this week, and a lot of people are talking about stacking sats, hashtag stacking sats in particular in Beijing.
It transcends cultural borders.
Hey, that's what we do here. We don't care about culture. We do care about culture. We let stacking sats fly.
There you go. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the defend crypto bullshit that's going on.
Oh, let's spend some time on this.
Kin Kick bullshit.
Defendcrypto.com if you want to go help.
No, it's .org.
.org, excuse me, if you want
to
go.
But don't go to it.
Don't go to it. So let's talk about it. A lot of people, there's a bifurcation in the quote-unquote crypto world, definitely not a bifurcation in the Bitcoin world, of whether or not to support Kick's court case against the SEC. Basically,
wait, so what's Kick, first of all?
It's an app.
It's like a WhatsApp competitor.
They basically were a company that was dying and they decided to launch an ICO. They raised $100 million, I believe.
And I think like Union Square Ventures was already an investor in Kick. To begin with.
Fred Wilson.
Right. Big token guy.
Big token guy.
So then they raised a $100 million ICO for their KIN token. The KIN token is used in Kick to buy like themes and shit.
Yes. And if you look at, apparently it's the number one used blockchain in the world.
Right. He had the nerve to say that.
Yes.
He had the nerve to say that to me on fucking
and
Twitter.
Is it run on Stellar right now or an ERC-20
token? The most used cryptocurrency in the world is his token, KIN. And he's getting his ass handed to him by the U.S. government. And he's launched this fundraising campaign called DefendCrypto.org. And like Shapeshift's behind it. A couple other big names are behind it. I know Masari.
Masari's behind it.
Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous. Like, how can you defend someone who's willing to like blatant? Like, he just spelled it out for us how much of a blatant liar he is. Like, even if you're like a Ripple head or an ETH head or something, like, you know, like, you think more people are using KIN? Like, that's like ridiculous. Like, at least tell like some kind of believable fucking lie.
It was funny. The last time, I haven't seen a landing page in a few days. The last time I saw it, most of the donations are being made in Ether, Bitcoin in second, then KIN in third.
Wait, so he donated. So they took part of their $100 million ICO, and they donated $2 million in Ether, $2 million in Bitcoin, and $1 million in their KIN token that has like 1.8 million in volume, daily volume a day. Like, fucking ridiculous. Donated his own funny money.
Well, I just thought it was funny that Ethereum was leading the fundraising charge, as probably the most, that platform in particular probably has the most to lose if this case goes awry. This is an interesting battle for the ICO industry to pick is Kick as the leader against the SEC, in my opinion.
I mean, I think you're fucked if you're willing to just back a known bad actor like this. Like, you're just proving their point.
I loved Fred Wilson's letter about it when he wrote the KIN token in parentheses, definitely not a security. It's just like that. Oh, case settled. Not a security.
Yeah, I mean, like, as far as I'm concerned, like, they should just be able to do whatever the fuck they want. It'll like just push things out of America. But they also should have known that this was the expectation. Like, we've all been warning of this the whole time. That's why Bitcoin has the design restrictions that it has, so that these kind of regulatory enforcements can't affect the underlying system. But they just ignored that, and they either just out of ignorance or in some cases like actual like malicious intent, like they just wanted short-term gains while the party lasted.
Yes. But are we bad cypherpunks, quote unquote, cheerleading for this court case to go awry?
I mean, as an American, I would prefer if the SEC took like a very hands off approach on all of this. Like, let everything play out. You know, more free market. Because the thing is, at the end of the day, as a Bitcoiner, I could give two fucking shits. And I'm not going to defend a fucking guy who's... I think I don't like calling people scammers, but like when you make a lie like that, like you're a fucking scammer. And yeah, like Bitcoin, you know, as like a Bitcoiner, it doesn't really matter. But as an American, like all this sketchy shit is just going to move to another place.
Yeah.
It's not going to go away.
No. But again, it's interesting that the industry is getting behind this, like you said, like overt lying about like the underlying fundamentals of their network, and how it works and how distributed it is. I think somebody looked into the distribution, like the amount of people with more than $30 worth of Kick or KIN, whatever it is like less than 1500.
I think there are just going to be some interesting things coming out of this. Like, a lot of people are looking at the chain now and stuff. So, yeah, we'll see.
Well, so I'm confused about the chain. Is there a Stellar chain in the ERC-20 chain?
No, so they started as the ERC-20, then it was supposed to go to Stellar, I believe, and now they're doing a fork. They have their own fork chain of, I believe, Stellar. So, like, a federated model. Yeah, it's... I mean, look, I don't even want to... all the specifics don't even fucking matter because it's definitely not the top used cryptocurrency in the world. It's barely even a cryptocurrency. So, like, fuck you, man. Like, that's just a ridiculous lie, and he should be called out for it. And people shouldn't, you know, people shouldn't be defending bad actors like this. It just makes everyone else look bad, and I refuse to do that.
I'm
definitely not having any of my Bitcoin, that's for sure.
None of mine as well, and I'll stand starkly with you. It's interesting to see who is backing this, though, and think about the entrenched incentives and motives that the people backing this defendcrypto.org campaign have. Just take it with a grain of salt. Think about people with perverse incentives. Did we talk about? I don't think we talked about this last week. Global Coin.
We didn't. Yeah, that's why I threw it on there.
Yeah,
Facebook's so, shitcoin.
Yeah, Facebook has come out with the most Orwellian coin name I've seen in a while, Global Coin.
I don't think it'll be called Global Coin.
I heard, like, somebody say it's going to be called like Libra or something like
that. Yeah, Libra would be a good name, though.
Libra, just piggybacking off the Winklevi, bro. They're Gemini and they're going to go Libra.
That's true.
Zuck doesn't have a fucking...
But Libra's good. It's like, what, like free? What does it mean, like, in Latin? It means free,
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, it means free. Yeah.
I don't know. I think there'd be worse names than Libra. As much as it's a fucking shitcoin, like this.
Global Coin is the worst name.
Global Coin is like probably the worst name you could do, especially when people think of you already as like an Orwellian type of, I'm going to use Facebook's Global Coin.
Yeah. Well, a topic of conversation that came up in the midst of this Libra/Global Coin announcement is that Facebook was helping sort of censor post and denying access to people in some countries a couple weeks ago when the authoritarian regime asked Zuck to cut off access. And just think about what's going to happen to your Libra or Global Coin when you make a transaction that Mr. Zuckerberg does not approve of.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously doesn't compete with Bitcoin. You know, like, it competes with, like, PayPal and stuff like that.
Could this be the AOL of quote-unquote blockchain adoption, where people get sort of incepted with the idea of the internet via AOL and then move to the free internet? Is this the same with Global Coin? Well, they'll get inundated with that and be like, oh, this sucks, I'm going to go use Bitcoin.
I don't know. It depends. It depends how Facebook does it. You know, if you put a Bitcoin and Libra wallet in every single WhatsApp, like, they could quickly become like one of the biggest Bitcoin wallet companies. It'd be fucking horrible.
The most used cryptocurrency in the world.
It would be horrible, but they could also then use that as the launching point to be like one of the preeminent chain analysis companies in the world, because they already have your Facebook data, and then they just pair it with your Bitcoin address data. But then the alternative approach is the users may never see an address, and you just send Libra from one person to another, and at that point, it's really not red-pilling anybody. It's just
Venmo.
Some more Facebook. Venmo bullshit, yeah. Or like Snapcash. Remember Snapchat? I don't know if they still have it. I uninstalled it, but Snapchat used to have Snapcash. They, like, you could send people cash through Snapchat. Like, that doesn't red pill anyone. I mean, more so than they've already been digital payments.
Yeah.
Used to that.
I never used the Snapchat version either. Yeah, so we'll be following that as it progresses as well. We got a short list. We're already on our last topic.
Yeah, I mean, this week was like kind of a slow week.
Yeah, Memorial Day sort of calmed everybody down. Or not.
It didn't calm anybody down. There was fucking a shit ton of drama on Twitter.
Maybe we'll touch on that later. But first,
I prefer not to, but okay.
Me either. But maybe we have to. BitRefill and Async yesterday opened up a one Bitcoin channel between each other, which is the biggest channel to have opened up to this point. The Lightning Network has, in its current implementation, its current specification, limit of 0.16777, etc.
Bitcoin, 60 million sats.
Yeah. As a limit that you can open the channel. Async and BitRefill made a custom specification themselves to allow for a one Bitcoin channel. They open that in the
100 million sats.
100 million sats. And the sort of impetus for that was to allow BitRefill customers using the Lightning Network to buy more at once.
Well, no, cool. It doesn't really do that, because
that's what it said in the BitRefill blog, I'm pretty
sure. I know. I mean, but they're like testing it out. But no one can really take advantage of it because no one else's channels to like Bitrefill or Async are over 16 million sats. Right? So you still can't send, you still can't route a payment through it. Like the average user can until the default gets
That's
removed.
That's true. That's true. But
it's still huge. It's still huge nonetheless, but it's mostly for routing in between the two of them.
Yeah. We'll see if it says stable. Shout out to Sergey, John Carvalho, Justin Carmona, and team at Bitrefill. Really pushing, again, pushing the edge. We don't know. Lightning Network's, like I said in the, I wrote about it on the event today, Lightning Network's further along than we thought it would be. Anybody that you talk to that's building or using the network, ourselves included, will openly admit it's got a lot more work to be done going forward than has been done up to this point, but stuff like this is promising, and we need more people pushing the edge like this, just fucking being completely reckless, making their own custom specification, and just proving, like, hey, maybe if their node and their channel is working is working well for a long enough period, it'll convince the Lightning specification to get a little bit looser with the amount you can put in your channels.
Yeah, I love this shit. Yeah. Just keep flexing, pushing the limit.
Yeah.
It's the best way to learn.
It is. And, oh, this brings us to our node. Moved up from number 46 to number 45 in terms of capacity. By number of channels, we're number 48. And the thief, have we heard from him?
Yeah, our fans node. He's a huge fan. You know, I've been talking to him through his email address that he posted up on the Stacking Sats at tutanoda.com.
Has he been friendly? Does he think he'll ever give the node back, or is it?
I think he plans to pass it to another fan so that it can just be fan run.
That would be the Lightning node torch.
There you go. But he's still reciprocating channels. It's growing.
What's the minimum?
Tor only.
Minimum reciprocation to
2 million sats.
2 million sats.
Yeah.
So you can find that by going to
but
one.
I guess we'll reciprocate. We'll reciprocate lower than that, like higher than 1 million. I guess the price has gone up since that limit.
Yeah.
I'll talk to him about it.
No, it hasn't. If you guys open up a channel, you want to experiment with some Lightning Network payments, check out the Dime Bag. We're actually working on another iteration of the Dime Bag, another cool little gadget that'll be on there hopefully in the next couple of weeks to a month. So be on the lookout for that. Officially sold out of hats. There's no more Sub Freak Sats. The first batch, this very scarce batch, is sold out. There will never be any more of these trucker hats made. So if any of you freaks out there were able to get your hands on one, congrats. It's a very rare item. Hold on to it dearly until it shows up on Canal Street at some point in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's we have to figure out. We still have to figure out what kind of merch we're going to go with next. We'll figure it out.
Slowly but surely. No rush. We're only 35 minutes in. Is this going to be a 35-minute rabbit hole recap?
No, it's definitely not going to be a 35-minute whole rabbit hole recap.
So we're out of topics. Let's just let's riff on something you sent me earlier today. Rise Wallet, they sent us a couple of free vouchers. They're a Canadian-based company, correct?
Yeah, this is not sponsored content, but they sent us free vouchers. They're a Canadian-based company that lets you onboard onto Bitcoin without KYC. I guess you like go to a store and you buy the voucher with cash. And then we actually tested out the voucher.
Yeah, tested out the voucher. Simple. Imagine going to a Wawa or a Duane Reade or a convenience store that sells something like an Amazon gift card, an Apple iTunes gift card, whatever it is, and it would have these Rise Wallet gift cards in certain denominations where it's 5, 25, 100. I'm not sure exactly how high it goes up to.
I don't think it goes above 100, but I'm not sure. They sent us $25 cards.
Yes, they sent us $25 cards. You download the app. Again, no KYC. It'll be connected to your phone, obviously, and your account on the App Store. But you can...
There's like literally no sign up. You scan it, and it's not a custodial wallet. Like, they generate keys for you on your device.
Yep.
And then they send you Bitcoin for the equivalent amount. So it's like pegged to the dollar amount until you scan. And then you can just immediately send it away to a new wallet if you want. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. No, I scanned the PDF of the gift card. It happened in seconds. And I sent it to Trezor pretty seamlessly.
It's fucking slick. It's a good app. They want to like put some education elements into it. And I guess like they're Canada only now, but I think they're trying to get into the U.S. So just something to keep an eye on. I think that's like a really easy way to onboard people. Especially if they add an element of education there, then the user doesn't go through KYC. They never actually trust anyone with the keys. You know, they're holding their own keys. That's pretty cool.
Another way to stack sats. Very similar to the Azteco model, that Pewdion's working on. But
that's in UK, right?
That's in the UK now.
Yeah.
I believe they hope to go global eventually, but yeah, these,
and there's another one there too, Fast Bitcoins or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
By the Neon B guy, Danny.
Danny Brewster.
Danny Brewster, yeah.
What happened? He he's on a path towards penance, correct?
Yeah, he like said I don't know if I've yeah. He basically blamed it all on the Cypriot authorities.
Yes. I think he raised money for a fund or something like that, or something. He raised money for something.
Now he's doing this Fast Bitcoins thing, and it's the same idea. It's a voucher system. I think this voucher idea is good, but it's going to be, and it's even better for this reason, but it's going to be like patchworks of different voucher systems everywhere because of the regulatory environment. It's really like a regulatory, like arbitrage type of play.
Yes. And again, just some more buy pressure on Bitcoin. And
the other one that was
at a time. Well, what I'm bringing up now, sorry, I fell off there because I'm looking it up, but it came out that in April, Grayscale, their Bitcoin, their GBTC product, was responsible for buying up 11,294 Bitcoin, I believe. And now the total, I believe, was like something like 20% of Bitcoin that were mined that month.
Oh, shit. What'd you say, 20% of Bitcoin?
I gotta find. Let me make sure. I'm gonna find the tweet.
That's pretty crazy.
And
I was joking the other day, like when Lolly rewards are greater than the block reward, that would be. But that's pretty crazy. They're just sucking it all up.
No, yeah, that and GBTC is a notoriously hard vehicle to get into. It's run on pink slips. It's arduous. To get into, but it's for mainly targeted towards high net worth individuals and family offices. And here's the exact stat. I was off by a little bit. Grayscale Bitcoin Trust accumulated 11,236 Bitcoin in April. Currently 54,000 Bitcoin are mined per month. So they're buying up, if they keep that pace, 21% of the new supply of Bitcoin per month, which is crazy.
21%.
Yes.
That's craziness.
Yeah. And we're a year away from the halving if they continue that buy pressure.
Then it's just, like half.
It's 42%.
That's crazy.
And just one fund, just one pink slip fund.
But the halving's priced in, Marty.
But think it is. We went over 9,000 a little bit, came down pretty hard. The halving's definitely priced in.
I like this narrative too, that this is halving action going on.
What is it? Why do you... 11,000... 236 Bitcoin in 1 month. Like, that's a lot of demand, and there's a lot of, isn't it like a lot of like wait time to get into that product? So is this like a lagging buy?
I have no idea. It's not a product that I would ever be interested in.
Yeah, they
but what is it total, like 2 billion? Is it, are they at 2 billion now? Assets under management?
I'm not positive, but the GBTC, it trades at like a ridiculous premium. GBTC is trading at $11,922.
It's because there's no ETF in America. If there was ever an ETF, then it would go down.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, that's what, I mean, that's a lot of high net worth individuals that are into GBTC and got in early. They're using that as like a great arb strategy.
And Barry's just pulling
crazy fees.
Yeah, he's just pulling his management fee out of it. Fucking most lucrative business.
Is this bad for Bitcoin, buying at one fund, buying 21%?
No, it's fine. I imagine if it was proof of stake, though.
Right?
then it could be an issue.
Well, proof of stake, it'll be easier. It'd be harder for nation states to take out a proof of stake network. I saw that you got in a little argument about that.
I don't think that's true.
What was the reasoning of the premise of the argument?
The one with Santee?
Yes.
The premise was that Maduro and other authoritarians could shut down Bitcoin miners, and they trace them by their electricity, so they're easier to shut down.
Is that a good? That's a pretty good argument.
I would no. So one of the beauties of Bitcoin mining, one of the beauties of mining in general, of proof of work, is that anyone can plug in their hardware around the world, do no KYC or anything, and they can access the system and get paid out for the work they provide. Right? That's where like Bitcoin's true permissionlessness comes from. Like the lack of permission there on actually getting your hands on your first Bitcoin. In a proof of stake system, like that doesn't exist.
Get the buy-in.
You have to buy it from someone. So if you regulate all the exchanges and whatnot, it becomes really difficult to get fiat basically into the system. So I would say that it's almost like a fictitious alternative to have, oh well, the Venezuelans already had coins somehow. Like, how do they obtain them? And then they're staking, so then there's no, you know, electric costs there, and they just keep getting paid the rewards. And then you have other issues with like POS, proof of stake, where like it's going to centralize with exchanges and funds and stuff like that. And those are easier to target and regulate. While mining, you can do like relatively anonymous.
So bringing it back to GPTC, like what happened if a government or something, or the U.S. government tries to seize their fund in particular? You think that could ever happen?
It'd be pretty bullish.
It'd be very bullish. The U.S. government would have a huge chunk of Bitcoin though.
Yeah, I mean it'd be really bad if it was proof of stake, right? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But with proof of work you don't have that issue. What kind of they could sell.
Exactly. I talked about Bulgaria. Does the US government have any seized Bitcoin still to auction off?
There's like rolling auctions when they like get Bitcoin.
It usually happens around this time of year though, right? Like early June, mid-June, I believe. I'm pretty sure that's when Draper bought his Silk Road Bitcoin.
They definitely don't have large amounts. I think it happens multiple times a year.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see if any of you freaks know if the U.S. government has any seized Bitcoin on the balance sheet. Let me know.
I think we're past the point where they would ever seize GBTC.
I did too. I was just trying to make a semantics point about affect proof of work system, but
they love GBTC because that's just like fully regulated Bitcoin. You know, no one has any self custody rights or anything.
Yeah, but again, just let that be an indicator for you freaks out there. There's very rich people paying a very high premium to get into this fund right now.
Yeah, there's also probably like middle income people paying too.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah, like people that just want to easily put in their IRA and they didn't listen to your episode with Andrew.
Isn't the minimum buy pretty high though?
If you just buy it on like TD Ameritrade or something,
yeah, you can buy it on TD.
I think you can just buy it on TD.
They sell pink slips on TD. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, you can just. It's like the easiest way for just some middle of the road American who's comfortable with like the stock market account to do it.
Hey, drop gold, buy Bitcoin. Buy gold, buy Bitcoin. You know, shout out to them again for that incredible marketing campaign. Have you seen that in the wild yet?
I haven't. I don't watch TV commercials, so
yeah, neither do I.
So I wouldn't know. No. But they're targeting all the key channels like the CNBCs and the Foxes and stuff like that. I think it'll be a pretty good campaign. It's already been successful because it riled up all the gold guys.
How do we think of mainstream media coverage of Bitcoin this time around as the Bitcoin price starts to pick up again? CNBC is tweeting about it more. I saw they just tweeted up Bitcoin last night. CNBC Fast Money, then like Product Hunt tweeted out. I'm worried. There was another CNBC segment earlier this week where somebody was lamenting that people need to sell their houses, sell their wives, sell their children, sell their dogs to buy Litecoin. Just beware. Beware of the sources of information you're taking in during these fanatic euphoric periods of the price swings.
Yeah, I mean, I think the coverage is more favorable in general, it seems. And that should become the case as Bitcoin gets more developed. It is a bit frustrating. And I mean, I tried to temper my expectations, but like all the same shit that we saw in 2017 is still there, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's just like hiding slightly below, but like, well, like fucking Leo got launched, the Bitfinex token, and like people are pumping that. I don't know. It's just, I feel, yeah.
Seems like the animal spirits are riling up all across the markets. No Vegeta memes were released during the recording of this podcast. We're still below 9,000.
Yeah, you're really excited to post that. I wouldn't have known it was over 9,000 unless I saw your meme. It happened so quickly.
Sorry for jumping the shark there, freaks. We're not jumping the shark, jumping the gun.
Did you see this app that Dan Heldschild, Get Pay or whatever?
Get Pay?
Is that how you think you pronounce it?
Yeah, Get Pay.
Pay? Did you try it out?
Have not tried it out, but I've talked to people who have. Have you tried it out?
Yeah, I installed it.
What do you think?
It's okay. It's SatSpec.
SatSpec, you have to tie in a credit card, right?
Yeah, I looked at the privacy policy. It's like, all right, I guess. Like, they're claiming the same thing as Lolly, basically, which is that their business model isn't selling your data, and that their business model is instead just getting a commission from retailers that you use. You register your credit card, super simple. It uses Plaid in the background, or Plaid.
Plaid.
It uses that in the background to pull your shit. And I hooked it up to one of my credit cards. I assume all that credit card information is just fucking up for grabs anyway.
Yeah, Equifax got pretty face fucked, so yeah. It's probably out there somewhere.
And the most, you know, with the problem with all these things is like partners, right? And, you know, like Helge is like posting withdrawals and stuff, but most of that is because he posted his ref link and that's where he got paid. But they have like Uber. Uber is like a big one, I guess. And then like a lot of fast food. I don't eat fast food, so.
Random Uber tangent here. As a lifelong New Yorker, how's the death of the Yellow Cab Company? How's that sitting with you? Are you going to miss them?
The actual company went out of business?
No, it's not going out of business, but I watched like a mini doc on with a bunch of like yellow cab drivers, and the medallion prices have obviously crashed, and Uber is competing at a pace at which they cannot. It seems like the yellow cab may be going.
Well, the yellow cab is a great story because you had these people who would invest, basically all their life savings were invested in these medallions, which allowed, every time you had a medallion, you were able to run a yellow cab. But the medallion system was based on a government-enforced scarcity model where the government was not issuing new medallions. There was a fixed amount. And it was a clear case of, like, it's like a centralized chain. Like, you're trusting a central validator to say that there's not going to be any new medallions or any new tokens. So the first thing the New York government did that really fucked them was they decided, you know, the green cabs?
Yeah.
They were like, ones. Those medallions aren't true yellow medallions. We created these new green medallions that allow you to have a green cab and it can only be in the outer boroughs. And they basically inflated the supply before Uber even came into town. And then Uber came in and basically broke down that scarcity model because they routed around it. You didn't need a medallion to run the things. And all these people, they just like lost their life savings. They lost everything because they took mortgages out on their medallions and they took loans out on their medallions.
At their peak, a medallion was like $1 million.
Like that was right before Uber hit. And then it's like very few people were lucky enough to sell their medallion at $1 million. Let's say it that way, right? And like just fucking plummeted. Like you can't even really sell them anymore. And that's just what happens when you trust, you know, like the government to run your basically your money, right?
Yeah. Small micro example of these systems playing out. Are you gonna have any nostalgia for the yellow cabs?
Well, you love taking yellow cabs.
I do.
I feel like I the majority of the time I take yellow cabs, I take them with you.
Yeah, because they're always just there.
Yeah. Well, they didn't used to be. It used to be really difficult to get a cab.
Right.
Now it's super easy to get a yellow cab. They're like in vogue again.
Yeah.
Because of that bullshit scarcity they had in the first place.
Yeah, this is why we're here, people, talking about truly scarce resources like Bitcoin. You're never going to print more than 21 million. Not my lifetime, at least. That's all we got. You want to riff on anything else? Are you going to miss the yellow cabs? That's what I like.
No. Uber provides a better experience.
Yeah.
The yellow cabs were resting on their laurels. It was a government sanctioned monopoly. Wherever is the case, I would like more free market. So, you know, hopefully Uber has some competitors that, you know, they do kind of, right? But hopefully they have more competitors. And I think the customer will end up seeing the lowest, best service, cheapest, best service.
We need a competitor to come in and light a fire under the MTA's ass. That's next. Elon, if you're listening, I know you are. Get the boring company out here. We need some underground tunnels by private companies.
Yeah, don't get your hopes up.
I'm not.
No, I think
we wouldn't even let Bezos come to Queens. I can't imagine letting Elon come into Manhattan and doing his thing.
I think that like in a city like New York, like how do you do subway costs and stuff with like the safety that you have nowadays? It's just super expensive. Everything's super expensive. So like, why not just wait 5 years, you know, and have like autonomous bus routes that you don't have to do like any new infrastructure. Basically, you could just do like Uber Pool, but with like
bigger Ubers.
Yeah.
We shall see.
So much cheaper.
The landscape has changed a lot in the last day. Watching that, again, that mini doc, I think it was Vice, just caught my eye. Colin Quinn did. I'm a big Colin Quinn fan. But it was interesting.
And I think the key there is that if you did it in a public transportation setting, you could have, like, if you had divided lanes, if they were in their own lane, then you're basically, it's like you're running a train without train tracks, you know, then that's super easy to run autonomous vehicles.
We already
have the hard part is when you have them with people and shit mixed in.
Yeah. We already have the red bus lanes here. Yeah. All right, freaks. That's all we got this week. Peace and love.
Stay humble, stack sats.